This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
How's it going and welcome to episode 131 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. You can follow me at 80 Grit, that's all spelled out. And you can follow Kevin Hastings at Hastings Kevin. Unfortunately, Kevin gets the week off this week. He should be back with us next week. And instead, I'm happy and welcome to the pod, Justin Havelock. Justin should be followed on the Twitter himself at Havelock Justin. And he is a centerpiece of the Pitcherless community as an active member and moderator within the PL Discord, as well as being the creator of The Outpitch and co-host of The Outpitch podcast. We'll talk about the latter a little bit later off in the show. But until we get to all that, Justin, I'm just happy you're here. Thanks for joining me, man. How you doing?
Well, thanks for having me. Doing great. It's great to be here and excited to talk about some baseball today.
Yeah, there's not a lot more time to talk about. We could talk about baseball all year round.
Oh, yeah.
But like active games going on in front of our face that matter for fantasy purposes. We've only got, 3 weeks left? This is uncharted territory in the season, obviously. It hasn't happened yet. So I'm getting a little antsy. I don't know how many leagues you're in or what kind of leagues you're in. I know I got kicked out of my PL staff league. I was the first man out of the playoff window. So I was fighting for that last playoff spot. Started off hot in the season. I was in the top three for most of the first half of the season, but started to drop off toward the end. Didn't make it there. I am in a dogfight in my home head-to-head dynasty league. And that's going to come down to the wire this first round. And then I've got a handful of leagues on my NFBC side where I'm looking to be top three, looking to cash. So fighting for those as well. How are you looking going into the last couple weeks of the season?
Oh, I'm actually out of the playoffs in all of my leagues already. I was in a really good spot to start the year, actually. And then over the summer, things just got really busy in my personal life. And
sure,
all those leagues started just spiraling down the standings. Not much to do with the playoffs right now, but it's fun to watch and help people out in the Discord.
Yeah, it's interesting depending on what kind of style of your league you're in. Even when you're out of the playoffs, if you're in like a keeper league or a dynasty league and you're still in your rules of your league still allow you to make moves, it's almost like more interesting to be in that situation where you're like, can play spoiler or you can pick up a guy that you like that might have been streamed by one of the playoff player, but you're like, hey, you know what? I could probably keep that guy anyway. And it just screws up everything.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I picked up Cole Ragans a couple of weeks ago in my dynasty league when everyone started getting hyped. And now all the playoff teams are just so mad about it.
Because they can't stream him. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. They would have loved to have him, but he's on my non-playoff team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably because of all the discourse that we had in the PL Discord server.
Absolutely.
And the Expect train that obviously he's driving.
Yeah. Next morning streams had me hyped on Cole Ragans from day one. And I'm like, okay, Nick likes this guy. Let's pick him up. Just see what he can do. And worst case scenario, I drop him in a couple weeks and it's on to the next guy. And no dropping Cole Ragans now.
Nope. Yeah, I got my Ragans AGA shirt in the mail yesterday. So I will be proudly wearing that tomorrow Sunday today as everybody's listening.
Yeah. Wearing mine right now.
Oh, there it is. You got it too.
Yep. Just got mine yesterday too.
Nice. Yeah, so we'll be proudly throwing that out there on Sunday and then every other start thereafter. He might be sitting on your dynasty bench as you're looking into the playoffs, but he will be driving the train if I am successful this postseason in my dynasty league. So that'll be fun. But yeah, like I mentioned, we jumped on that train thanks to the discourse that we had in the PL Discord through PL Plus, PL Pro, however you sign up for that. And you're right in the center of everything. I play a more of a fly on the wall role on the Discord. I do a lot more listening and watching than I do writing in the Discord. Every once in a while, I'll throw out like a little blurb, a little insight or a piece or whatever. And I spend a lot more time in like the extra channels that we have, like in the movie and the TV sections and all that.
Yeah.
But you're like in the thick of it. What is the most active part of the Discord at this time, do you think?
Oh, gosh. I think this time of year, it's still the Baseball General. That seems to be the one that blows up my phone the most right now. Football General is starting to pick up with football season around the corner, too, though. Everyone's just either you're looking at baseball playoffs, whether it's your team or fantasy, or you're looking at like the start of football because either your team or your fantasy are out of the playoffs.
This is a topic we don't typically bring up here on this podcast or any other podcast, and that is the F word, the football being the word of choice.
My apologies.
But yeah, it is actually interesting that you bring that up. It's something that we don't talk about enough or at all, is that if you're in PL Plus or PL Pro, you get in the Discord, but that includes the QB list stuff too. And it's something that as somebody personally who literally is only in one fantasy football league, and that has been the case for the last few years, that I don't pay nearly enough attention to. And sorry, Dave, if you're listening to that, our commissioner, it is nice to know that is in my back pocket for it's like on Sundays, they're going to be doing the live chats there where, hey, help you set your lineups, you do last minute waiver claims, stuff like that. And it's nice to know that it's there, that I can rely on, that it's just like part of the community built in. It's like a bonus perk, if you will, as well. One more plug for PL Plus. Go if you haven't joined in on that, and get that. If for no other reason, get the yearly subscription and you get all the football stuff as well. But that's something we don't talk about enough here. And I don't know if I want to say we wouldn't talk about it enough, but we don't talk about it at all.
Yeah, definitely. It's a great time, especially just like on game days, on Sundays. It's always great just hanging out in the Football General. Everyone's watching the game, having a good time. Everyone's watching 10 different games, so you don't even need to have Red Zone. You just have the Discord open and you get every game covered.
I like it. Yeah, that even in the Baseball General, that happens enough for me where, especially in the early games, if I forget like an early game's about to start. Actually, this happened to me the other day, which is almost unfortunate, when Andrew Abbott got blown up in the first inning, and I had forgotten that his game had actually started, but he was starting for my team, and I just saw somebody type in, oh, Abbott, with like the burning face, and I'm like, oh no, I hate that I learned about this here, but I am also very grateful that I learned about it at all so quickly. Yeah, it's where I get all my news and notes, so I'm going to force that segue here. Let's say let's get back into baseball here, talking about the news and notes from the week. And as I always say, the news and notes that we talk about on the show typically are focused on things that may impact your FAB consideration. So a whole bunch of stuff happened that we're not going to talk about. You listen to First Pitch Podcast every day and find out everything that's happened on the daily basis. Here, we're just talking about things that probably are going to impact how you're considering spending your FAB dollars. So, Justin, let's get right into it here. We got a couple of call-ups we're going to lead here with. First and foremost, a lot of analysts out there considered him, or at least in the top three, if not the top one overall prospect. I know our very own Heckman said that he's very strongly of the opinion that Jordan Lawler is the number one prospect in baseball. He was called up by Arizona actually a little bit later than in my opinion, that I think a lot of us, me, Kevin and I, at least, and other people that have been on the show in the last couple of weeks have thought he would have been a guy that, like Corbin Carroll was last year, getting called up right at that 40-day mark, that day where it's like there was no chance he was going to be on the roster for 440 days, lose rookie eligibility. But you know what? better late than never. He's up in Arizona now. Nick Ahmed, who's been a staple for the Diamondbacks on that roster for many years, he was DFA'd to make room in the corresponding move. Are you of the excited ilk here about Lawler and what he can do in the final few weeks of the major league season in our fantasy season? Like I said, like dynasty manager Matt Heckman appears to be as well.
Oh, absolutely. I not only have a couple shares of Jordan Lawler myself, but just as an avid reader, and honestly, like a lot of the times the editor of Matt Heckman's stash list, I'm right there with Matt, just ready to see him graduated off that list tomorrow, or today, actually, I guess by the time you're listening to this, he will be off the stash list and he's up in the majors. He has his first career stolen base as of today, actually, I saw earlier, right before we recorded.
Yeah, Matt has rules like you can't be in the majors at all to be on his stash list anymore, right? I think that's his rule. He'll obviously, he'll keep prospect eligibility on like your typical prospect list. He'll keep rookie eligibility. He won't get enough service time. He won't get enough at bats. He won't get enough games at the major league level this year to lose it again. And that's by design, obviously, because I'm of the assumption that Corbin Carroll is going to run away with NL Rookie of the Year this year. And that's exactly what Arizona was hoping for. They will get that bonus draft pick when he wins that award. And they're hoping for the same thing with Jordan Lawler. If he has rookie eligibility going into 2024, he'll be on the opening day roster. They will gladly take another compensation draft pick if he wins NL Rookie of the Year next year. But that is definitely by design. We're going to see that at least through this CBA, as long as they don't change anything in the next CBA, it'll continue to be a trend that we see moving forward. Lawler, yeah, definitely seems to be the guy, in my opinion, that if you've got the monies on your fab list, and you need a bat, simple as that. You don't have much more ways to spend your money the rest of this year, especially in your weekly fab leagues. Go ahead and spend it all here. We got another call up in Texas, though, Justin, worth talking about for sure. Evan Carter was called up to the Rangers. In the corresponding move on the unfortunate side of things is because Adolis Garcia went to the IL with a patellar tendon strain. Again, it seems to be a one-for-one swap with the Rangers outfield. Are you expecting to see Carter in the outfield every day and producing enough to fill Garcia's shoes while he's out in this short period of time as the Rangers are still fighting for not only a playoff spot, but for their division?
Yeah, I do think that Carter will get a chance at an everyday role. I was looking at it before the podcast, and I actually think they're both quite similar players. From Texas's perspective, it's really just like they're giving up a little bit of power in Garcia for a slightly better hit tool with Evan Carter. Evan Carter's plate discipline should be better too, so I think that's not only a good move for Texas, but to me makes him an instant must roster in any OBP league.
Yeah, Carter started his first game on Friday against a righty, batting ninth in right field. He did not start today as we're recording this on Saturday. Of course, they're going up against the lefty. So, of course, at very first glance, in the smallest of sample sizes, of course, you've got to worry about any kind of platoon issue that Texas might be doing this with the rookie, and wondering what kind of playing time we'll see out of that situation. Garcia obviously was an everyday player, getting a day off here or there, but not a platoon situation for sure. It does look like Carter's going to be playing, obviously going to be playing right field as Garcia is out. The question would remain, personally, not about what production he will produce while he's on the field, is how often will he be on the field? And I guess just on this short sample, you got to be a little worried about that regarding how much time Robbie Grossman's going to fill in, because he started in right field today on Saturday, how much time they might. Obviously, Mitch Garver is hot and he's going to be holding down the fort at the DH position for them. And so there's not as much flexibility there unless they want to just give him a random day off as well. So something to monitor. Obviously, most of my money in this situation is going toward Lawler. I'm not going to be opposed to bringing in Carter, especially if I need an outfield specific situation on a team. But I am worried about how much time the Rangers are going, or how much consistent time the Rangers are going to throw him out there. All right. We're going to talk about more than one of the Luis Garcias on this program, this episode, but we'll start off with the one in the Nationals organization. The Luis Garcia in Washington is expected to be back with the Nationals. Playing, I would assume, second base here again. Are you hoping or expecting the Nationals to provide him with any kind of room to play and hopefully produce down the stretch? Because it seemed like they were really tugging him around, and obviously with the demotion earlier on this summer, are you hoping that they're just going to be like, you know what, there's only 3 weeks left, let's just go for it, let's see what you got?
Yeah, I think truthfully the Nationals really don't have much else on the roster. Like,
that's what I said when they demoted him though.
Yeah, fair enough. I do think it'll be second base, like you mentioned, because CJ Abrams seems to have shortstop pretty locked down at this point. But yeah, they've got Yoderma Vargas and Jake Alou as his only competition at second base. I think Luis Garcia is never somebody who's really caught my eye for fantasy purposes, but I think a lot of times we can fall into that trap of forgetting that these are still really good real life players. And the Washington Nationals really don't care what's good for our fantasy rosters at the end of the day.
I don't think they care about a lot of things.
Oh, that's another story.
Yeah, we won't get into the Strasburg fiasco that's been going on. That doesn't really affect our fab here, but the Nationals are, and I joked about this in the Discord, but it seems like there's more. My son had his very first T-ball game earlier this morning, and that he's 3 years old. That went as well or as unwell as you would probably have expected. It was pure and utter chaos. And I went into that with absolutely no expectations. And I likened that situation to what's happening with the Nationals right now. And I think they're pretty much a one for one swap. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think it's a good analogy.
It was 3-on-3 baseball. I'm just gonna only three kids from each team showed up for opening day. If that happened with the Nationals, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just gonna say that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were surprised at the deadline that they didn't make more moves. I think if the Nationals had some players hitting off of a tee, they probably could have sold more at the deadline.
There you go. That's all you needed. Yeah, Garcia came back and he started at second base on Friday and Saturday. Hasn't recorded a hit yet. I don't think he has a hit today. I haven't actually looked, but went 0 for 3 on Friday. Obviously, hadn't played a game in Washington since the beginning of August after he was demoted. So his last hit at the major league level came on July 29th. So we'll see if he can, rekindle the what was supposed to be a kind of promising situation for the young middle infielder. Turned strictly second baseman in Washington. All right, we're going to end here with some news out of San Diego. They are just literally breaking any limb that they can possibly get their hands on here, which is unfortunate. In San Diego, catcher Gary Sanchez, he fractured his wrist, and first baseman G-Man Choi also fractured his ankle. Obviously, Choi was already on the IL as well. Those guys aren't coming back, not this season. Do either one of their absence or in choice, like the solidification of his absence, provide any extra playing time for anyone else? And then creating any interesting situations across the San Diego lineup from what you can see so far?
Yeah, going by roster resource, Luis Campusano seems to be the starting catcher right now for the Padres. And I think you could legitimately make the case for a post-hype sleeper. Where it's, I know every time you bring up that term, people start cringing and all, Luis Campusano, this again, I've been there before. But while it's a small sample size, Campusano's been hitting the ball really well this season. He's got 5 homers, a .302 average, and a .124 WRC+. Especially at the catcher position, that'll do in fantasy. Look, it's a small sample. He could easily come back down to earth. We've seen this before with guys like Lewis Brinson or Keon Broxton that are post-height sleepers too. But when it's a catcher, I'm a little bit more inclined to take the risk. And like we were talking about with Reagan, sometimes you just have to jump on board the hype train and see what you've got. And then if it doesn't work out, you just move on to the next guy.
Yeah, they called up Brett Sullivan a little while ago. He has not started a game since being called up at the beginning of September. So he is on the roster, can make the playoff roster if necessary, but it definitely he was called up before Sanchez got hurt. And in that time frame, Campusano and Sanchez had pretty much been a 50-50 split. Prior to September turning in the calendar, Sanchez was getting, it was more of a 60-40 or 70-30 split, with Sanchez getting more of the bulk. And so I would definitely tend to agree that it's a pretty obvious statement to make that Camposano is going to get a good chunk of playing time, pending that he can stay healthy himself.
Yeah.
Hasn't always been able to do that himself as well. But in his very short sample size that we are worried about, aka the next 3 weeks, it is definitely a risk that I'd be willing to take with the pedigree that Camposano has shown in the past and has come up with. Yeah, I definitely agree with you. As I mentioned, Ji-Min Choi had been out already on the IL. He obviously will not be coming back due to this additional injury. But the fact that he's not coming back, sure up anything that for the Padres lineup that you can tell?
I don't personally think so. You've got like Jurickson Profar, Garrett Cooper, and Matt Carpenter forming this sort of platoon coming off the bench at first base. And I think it just personally siphons any value off of any of that, anything that those players could bring to the table at this point, where, you know, even if one of them does go on a hot streak, if they're playing 3 days a week, it's not going to be much of a streak, really.
Yeah, I think that when Ji-Min Choi came over from Pittsburgh and Cooper came over from Miami at the deadline, it was pretty obvious that this was going to be a one-in-one platoon. But obviously, with Ji-Min Choi going on the IL in the mid-August, just like about a week after he got traded, Carpenter kind of moved into that situation, with Cooper getting the bulk of almost everyday playing time for a time there. But in the last 2 weeks, it's been a pretty much a 50-50 split there with Carpenter. God bless him, getting as much playing time as the Padres will possibly give him in that situation. I think that pretty much sums up not a ton of news, at least not Fab related. Maybe we'll get into some things that we missed off when we get into our player recommendations. But for now, we're going to move on to our focus topic here, and we are going to do that after this quick break. All right, we are back. Of course, you were still listening to On the Wire. I am Adam Howe, joined this week by Justin Havelock. Justin is the creator and co-host of the Outpitch podcast, part of the Outpitch, I don't know, site. It's a Substack. I never know how to refer to a Substack. It's like, should I just say it's a site, or should I say it's a Substack, a newsletter? However, how do you reference it?
Yeah, I personally just call it a blog, but anything works. It does get a little tricky when I'm trying to explain it to people, especially I was trying to explain it to my grandparents once, and I'm like, it's just a website, but they don't need to know all the behind the scenes side of it.
Link.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the Outpitch, what you have going on, why it exists, and or why you wanted it to exist, and what you've got coming up down the pipeline.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the Outpitch, it's a blog I created on Substack during the pandemic, actually. And for me, just as an openly gay man in the sports industry, it was really important for me to have this place where I could feel unfiltered when I'm sharing my thoughts on the game and write some articles that you don't always see in the baseball world, talking about some of the big problems within the sports world and tapping into some of my own personal experiences, and sometimes just being able to show a bit of vulnerability that sometimes we don't have the opportunity to put into an article. So sometimes the Outpitch, you're going to see just your usual run-of-the-mill fantasy content. I've done things where I'm ranking fantasy quarterbacks while eating the world's hottest pepper. But sometimes it's also writing about some of the social issues going on. Like I mentioned, I did one not that long ago about the problem that Tom Brenneman still poses even today. Definitely worth a look at that. Right now, what I'm working on, I've got an article coming out later this month that's going to look at the trend of athletes putting up career high numbers after coming out of the closet. We got a great example just in baseball this year with Anderson Comas coming out within the Chicago White Sox minor league organization. And he's just been absolutely on fire. I was talking to a friend just a couple of weeks ago about, I would never pick up a relief pitcher in Dynasty. And he's like, didn't you just do that the other day? I'm like, oh, Anderson Comas. I'm like, that's a little bit different, but there is a little bit of upside there. I wanted to scoop him in my Dynasty League before other people start getting hyped on what he's been doing. And so, yeah, I've just been working on this article, looking not only across baseball, but across all kinds of sports as to what athletes do, because a lot of athletes tend to do really well, contrary to some of the narratives out there once they've come out of the closet. And feel more free and relaxed and able to be themselves. And
I would venture to guess, and this is an absolute guess, obviously, because I am not in these locker rooms. I am not around these players, but I would venture to guess that that kind of production or that kind of spike in production, and you'll probably come across this as you're doing more research on this, would have to do a lot with the environment where they came out toward, whether it's their teammates, whether it's the organization that they're in, the support that they either receive or unfortunately may not receive, depending on what the people around them, how much support they have of just people around them in general. And you all, on the flip side of that, you've got to assume that there are players out there that are not coming out for that exact reason. And I don't know if you've come across that already as you've been doing research for this or the series of articles that you're putting together, but would that be a fair assumption at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I know it's something that Nick talks about all the time when he's talking about pitchers, that pitching is such a mental game, right? That there's so much psychologically that goes on in a pitcher's mind. And if he's not focused, if there's something going on personally, I know there's been speculation in Toronto about Alek Manoah this year that he's talked about having some struggles with his mental health. And there's been some speculation as to how that's affected his performance. So it's definitely very similar here, that a lot of players that have to keep that inside can absolutely have a lot of those struggles where we're waiting for that breakout year and it doesn't seem to happen because they're struggling with something that we don't know about at all. And then they come out of the closet, and the ones that do just tend to just be living their best life and having a blast, and it translates into some really good production.
Yeah. Again, if you've got the support around you, then you feel comfortable doing that in where you are. It's not so surprising. It's not surprising that if you feel comfortable enough to come out and around your teammates and what have you, that you would then go and do positive things on the field as well, whether it's by the stat book or by scouting or what have you. So that's not a terribly surprising thing to hear. And so I would expect to read more of that in the articles over on the Outpitch as well. Yeah, you touched on it with the whole mental game we talked about. We've seen Trevor May go through his struggles early on in the season. He came right out and talked about that. Austin Meadows is still on the IL. Hopefully he's continuing to get whatever help he needs to get back out there. If that's what he wants to do at this point, this is not mental health related, but like you saw somebody like Buster Posey retire early just because he wanted to, like, that's okay too. And so you've seen somebody like Trevor May though come back and now excel. Granted, it's on the A's, and unfortunately for him, but they do provide him with a situation where he can excel that he might not get on a winning ball club. So again, with the right support and with the great people around you, you can get back to a place where you can start producing, professionally, because that's what they're being paid to do, and mentally as well. It's great. What about the Outpitch podcast? Is that something that you're the co-host of it, from what I can tell? Do you bring in guest people, or do you have a set co-hosts of your own there and regularly just talking about the things that you guys are producing on the blog, or is it more just freeform?
Yeah. So that's a podcast that I host with Crystal O'Keefe from Pitcher List. And the two of us, we have a blast hosting this. We've been off for a little while over the summer. We've both had busy schedules with our personal lives, but we'll be back at some point later this month. And yeah, it's something that I always like to say, we flip the script from your traditional podcast, that usually people start with what's going on in the world and then segue into the fantasy stuff. And we reverse that a little bit, starting with some of the fantasy stuff, some of the major headlines going on in the game. And then we transitioned into some, I guess serious is maybe the right word, but not necessarily always very dark, but still keep a very lighthearted tone, talking about social issues, talking about things that happened during Pride Month. We've talked about some of the mental health issues, like you were mentioning with Trevor May or Austin Meadows or Dansby Swanson. We've even talked about MLB blackouts and how that's affecting the game and how that's affecting fans. We really carve through a wide spectrum of subjects and just try and open up the conversation a bit more.
Yeah, sorry, I gave a giant eye roll when you said MLB blackouts, and I didn't. That was not directed at you. Obviously, it was directed at the topic of blackouts in general, especially when you're in a situation. I know everybody. I know the people in the state of Iowa get it the worst for some reason, but I'm close second, and I live in Indiana. I live in Indianapolis, where we don't have a major league team, but I still get blacked out of three different teams, both Chicago-based teams in Cincinnati. I'm in that bubble, and it just. I couldn't watch the Cole Reagan start, okay? His last start, he faced off against the White Sox, and I could not watch it with Nick on playback.tv because it was blacked out in my area. And I'm just like, I've ranted enough about that. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Definitely a good reason to rant with how he's been playing lately.
Yeah, if you guys aren't already, make sure you are following Justin on the Twitter. Have you jumped ship on Twitter as well, Justin? Are you anywhere else besides Twitter, or are you still just seeing where this train wreck goes?
Yeah, I'm still on Twitter at the moment. I've never been a big social media guy, so Twitter and Discord is all I have, but I have not jumped ship yet. I'll probably be one of the last to leave once we know where everyone's going officially, but definitely keep an eye out there. If I do jump ship, I'll definitely make a couple of announcements before then so people know where to follow me next.
That's fair. Yeah, it's at Havelock Justin. And of course, on the PL Discord, you can't miss him. He's out there all the time as well. So get his take there. That's probably the easiest way. I always say the same thing about myself, even though I said that I don't type a bunch of stuff there. I'm always there. I'm always paying attention. It's easier to tag people there as well. And yeah, I haven't jumped ship from Twitter. I did start a thread account, Threads, but I think I posted one thing there, and all I get are notifications from at MLB because I haven't clicked on follow enough people there either. I'm not sure how that's going. I should probably log in just to check it out. I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. But let's get into the crutch of the episode here. Of course, that is, we got to spend the rest of our Fab dollars. We can't take it with us. So we got some players in mind that we want to spend them on. And we're going to get into all of those after this second quick break.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
All right, we are back once again. Of course, Adam Howe here, joined by Justin Havelock, and we're going to get into some player recommendations in which we have to spend your last remaining Fab dollars. Guys that might or may not be available. We got a good mix of players that are available in your 15s, in your 12s, some in your 10s, most of them in your 10s. And we'll go right down the list as we tend to do. Justin, I'm going to let you kick us off here in the power department. Home runs, RBIs, what players are out there that could be available in whatever size leagues, whatever, and why would you be spending what few amount of Fab dollars you have left on these guys?
Yeah, so if I'm looking for power right now, the first thing I'm doing is I'm checking to see if Spencer Torkelson's still out there, because I noticed when prepping for this podcast, he's still only 61% rostered in Yahoo leagues, which with the way he's been playing lately is absurd to me. At least double check. Last thing you want to see is that one of your league mates grabbed him because he was still out there and you forgot to check. But the player that I really wanted to get into here is Nelson Velasquez, the outfielder for Kansas City. He's only 15% rostered in Yahoo leagues. But since his Royals debut on August 10th, Velasquez has 9 home runs, 17 RBI, and 148 WRC plus in 84 plate appearances. He probably went unnoticed to a lot of people when he was traded at the deadline because he was traded for Jose Kwas and that wasn't a big trade that was really on anyone's radar. But Velasquez, like I said, he's been hitting for some big power lately. He's got a 91.7 mile an hour average exit velocity, 21.4 barrel rate, 46.4% hard hit rate. When I'm looking for power, those are numbers that I like to see. And he's become a regular in the middle of the Royals lineup. He's rotating between DH and the corner outfield spots. So if you're desperate for power, especially in a roto league where you have some room to make up ground in home runs or an RBI even, Velasquez is definitely someone that I'll swing for the fences on.
He got picked up, Velasquez, that is, in my during the playoffs, in this first week of the playoffs in my home Dynasty League. And he was dropped the same day just because of the roster crunch this team had. And so that was just funny to watch because the rules are if you pick up somebody and drop them the same day, they don't go back on waivers. They just go right back into the free agent pool and anybody can pick them up. This was after he went on his back-to-back home run days. Of course, as you mentioned, all this power that we're seeing out of him, he's had 4 home runs in the last 8 games. That's including today with RBIs and runs scored in each of those, of course, in multi-hit games in 3 out of those games as well. So the only thing that worries about picking up a guy like this in a situation is just that you don't get those stats when you spend money on it. It's what moving forward. And everything that I've seen and the underlying aspects of it is this is real. This is absolutely real. As long as the Royals continue to put him out there, he's going to continue to have these kind of streaks. And I'm just hoping that this streak isn't over yet. hoping that he can continue to put another string of these together in the next couple weeks. And yeah, as you mentioned, I'm just curious to see where we stand. He is 13% rostered in our On the Wire listener leagues. And so he is readily available in those 12 teamers. And so this is somebody I think more so than Torkelson, who is a little bit more rostered, as you even mentioned, even in Yahoo, especially if you need outfielder help. This is a guy that we're going to see get picked up quite a bit. He's only 66% rostered in the main event. And so as long as KC continues to throw him out there on a regular basis, he'll be picked up even in these 15 teamers, or especially in these 15 teamers where he's not already. So a third of the leagues at the highest level can still has a chance to grab him. Somebody I'm going to throw out there, another first baseman, if Torkelson is indeed picked up, that is probably a little bit more readily available just because he's just came back from the IL, and that's Nick Prado staying with the Royals here, 28% rostered in the main event. He just returned from the IL. And unlike Velasquez, who may very well be playing every day without any kind of platoon considerations, Prado very well could be put right back into a platoon role at first base, even using Salvador Perez to expel him from time to time. But this week coming up, Kansas City is set to face 5 right-handed pitch starters versus the White Sox and Houston throughout the course of the week, with at least according, if you're looking wherever you're looking at probable starter grids, I'm using Roster Resource at the moment. They just think that Framber Valdez will be the only lefty, and that comes next Sunday. So as long as that rotation sticks around, that'll be the only lefty that Kansas City faces off against. Prado, not the biggest power hitter, but he's put together plenty of streaks of his own. And now that he is back in Kansas City, obviously you don't have Vinny Pasquin chipping away at that playing time as well at first base. He should be in there, even on the strong side of platoon, can still put together. As long as he's actually healthy and they didn't just force him back in there, he should be out there plenty of times to provide positive value at the first base or corner infield position, depending on where your needs are. And he is readily available in most leagues. All right, let's move on to some speed options here, Justin. I'm going to lead off here just because it's somebody I really wanted to talk about him. It's not somebody I was really considering until he started actually doing stuff. And that we talked about him just because he did get called up. So like I honestly think Kevin just threw him into a conversation as a name drop, but it wasn't of any real note. I'm talking about Kyron Paris, shortstop for the Angels, 21% rostered in the main event. He has one carrying tool, and that is stealing bases. Through his time in Double A, skip Triple A, as the Angels tend to do, it seems, at least as of recent, for 49 stolen bases in Double A this year before getting the call up to Anaheim. And then while in Anaheim, so you got called up just in time for playoff rosters. Not that it matters with the Angels, obviously. No. but on September 1st, he has attempted half of his stolen base opportunities. He has attempted a stolen base. Granted, that he's only had six opportunities in this nine-game span, but he's still taken 50% of those chances, and he's been successful all three times. And with the history he's shown at the minor league level, where they're playing by the same rules, he can take advantage of that, and he is going to take off, and he's going to be successful way more than not. Like I said, only five caught stealings out of 49 attempts at the minor, at the Double A level. I get it. The catchers aren't as good at that level. Even the pitchers aren't as good at that level for holding runners. So I don't expect him to be like stealing 44 bases the rest of the year, but I do expect him to continue to get the green light as long as he can get on base. Now, in the short period of time that he's been up, he's got, you know, a below 20% K rate and double digit walk rate, which he's carried over from his minor league career. So he can get on base. He's not doing it with the stick. He's literally batting 100 going into today's games. And so maybe walking every single time is the best way to do it, because at least he's getting onto first base and the Angels aren't putting anybody else on base. So more than likely there's no runner in front of him. So there's nobody on second base to block him from taking that chance. He is batting ninth. That is the quote, second leadoff runner. He won't get as many at-bats, but you would assume even with the Angels, the top of that lineup would give him, if, as long as he can get on base, he'll put himself in a situation to score more runs as well. So he does, even with the 100 batting average, he's got a 280 on base percentage, which obviously on the surface isn't that great, but the fact that it is 180 points higher than his batting average is good. Yeah. That aspect is good. That, of course, goes to his double-digit walk rate, where he's getting on base in that manner. So yeah, Kyron Paris, shortstop for the Angels, 21% in the main event, readily available in anything lower than that. If you're desperate for speed, he is playing every single day, so the Angels are going to continue to give him that look. They don't have anybody else at this point. They've either thrown them on waivers, they're hurt, or they've been sent back down to the minors, and they're not knocking down the door to take his playing time. So in the final 3 weeks, Paris should get the opportunities, and if he gets the opportunities, it sure seems like he's going to take advantage of them. I don't know if that's like a situation. You said that you've been knocked out a lot of things, a lot of your leagues at this point. So specific categories, especially like a one-hit wonder type of situation, like with Paris, may not be somebody you're targeting. I don't know that I would be targeting Paris in like a dynasty league per se, but this is a very, I need, you know, four more stolen bases to get up one or two more spots in the standings in that category. Paris is almost a no-brainer in that situation. Yeah. Also somebody I might be consider throwing at least a keep your honest bid with whatever money I have left, just so somebody else who is in that situation in my league can't do it. So even if I have the flexibility in my roster at this point, I might even consider throwing a $1 or $2 bid on them just to throw them on my bench, so nobody else gets that opportunity. Paris seems like the most like direct line, the direct route to a stolen base surge down the stretch. I don't know if you feel differently, but I know you got a different guy on here who is one of my favorites, and I felt really bad for trading him away last year in my dynasty league, but I'm glad to see him succeeding.
Yeah, I've got Nolde Marte here. He's stepped right into the everyday third base role since he's made his major league debut with Cincinnati, and he's only 10% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. He's got 23 stolen bases in each of his past three seasons, including his 24th last night across all three levels, of course. He's got a 28.8 feet per second sprint speed. So it's not necessarily anything to write home about, but this is a guy who's got speed and makes good base running decisions. And that's one of the biggest things I'm looking at when I'm looking at stolen bases, because we see plenty of guys that are fast, but they got caught stealing a ton. Like Whit Merrifield comes to mind. You want guys that are going to make good decisions on the bases. You want guys that are going to play every day. And Joey Votto and Jonathan India are both likely to return over the next week from the IL. But Matt McClain is probably done for the season. So I think worst case scenario here, there's at least room for a platoon at third base with Spencer Steer, if not a chance for him to hold on to that everyday third base job once Votto and India come back. He's shown above average to elite contact skills and high walk rates his entire career. So like you were saying with Kyron Paris, he's going to get on base and that'll help him make the most out of these opportunities and load up with steals. I wouldn't go too hard in the paint for Noel V. Marte because, like I said, it's not necessarily league-breaking speed, but as we always say, availability is the best ability. And with Marte, you're not only getting availability, but you're getting consistency, which in my opinion is the second best ability, is not just these guys that will go on those big streaks like we were talking about with Nelson Velasquez, but a guy that will just constantly chip in 2 to 3 steals every single week as long as he's got an everyday role.
Yeah, Marte, since getting called up to the majors, a very solid 22% or 22.22 SBOT rating going towards second base, which is to say that he has taken more than 1 out of 5 chances that he's been given, which is above the Major League Baseball average. Granted, very small time frame that we're talking about, slightly larger than Kyron Paris, but not by much. But yet the fact that he's shown the running ability in the minors, and it's translated into a ballpark that is not known for guys running a lot, but obviously for other aspects of the game, which Marte can still take advantage of as well. But if we're focusing here on the speed, Marte still 80% rostered in online championships. So there are a fifth of those leagues that still have him out on the wire in those 12 teamers on the NFBC platform. So not as readily available there, as you mentioned, 10% on Yahoo rostered. So one out of 10 leagues have him on a roster, but still check, as Justin mentioned earlier, if you're going to do this, you do it right. Make sure you just do the control F, do the search box, make sure that they're actually not there. Cause if they're there, you're going to want to put them up there on your waterfall bits. Anybody else in this category that you might be targeting if they're available?
I guess the only other guy I'd bring up would be Dyron Blanco in Kansas City. Just a guy I'd throw in one of those small, keep him honest bids, throw a couple dollars down. If you're bidding on Noel V. Marte this weekend, for example, and you're worried you're going to lose out on him because your league mates listen to this podcast, just throw Blanco on your list just as a backup.
Yeah, always like having somebody who is on a team, who can run on their own, obviously. But if they're on a team who is willing to run, and shocking revelation, the Kansas City Royals like to run. This is not something that has been new over the course of the last few years. Absolutely not. But they have led the league this year in SBOT second base. So this is stolen base opportunities taken towards second base at a 14.8% clip. Major League roster is 10%. They're well above average. They are at the top of the league, right above Tampa Bay and Cincinnati, as we talked about Noel V. Marte just before this. So again, these percentages change year to year, but Kansas City is consistently in the top five for at least the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Blanco's got some wheels too. He's second in the league right now behind Ellie De La Cruz in sprint speeds. He's definitely got that speed if you're looking for stolen bases.
Yeah. Obviously sprint speed has been the driving factor of whether or not a guy's going to run. Simple as that.
Yeah.
It's if they're fast, especially the research that I did that Kyle Bland helped me with in the offseason. The number one variable that you look at, and of course, you're looking at the catcher pop time, you're looking at the how well a pitcher can hold the runner on base. The thing that drives whether or not a runner is going to run or not is driven by how fast they actually are. So their ability to actually get to the next base as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So
that's, you can't do it, why not do it?
Yeah. All right, let's get into some guys that might have a good opportunity ahead of themselves, whether they're facing the corrected handed pitcher that they want, or they have a lot of games ahead of them, whatever that case may be. I will get into some of these teams that do have a lot of games next week. Half the league actually has a full 7-day work week. I'll list all of them off so you can check them off at home. Baltimore, Boston, the New York Yankees, Tampa Bay, Toronto, the White Sox, Texas, Miami, the Mets, Washington, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Arizona, Colorado, and San Francisco all have games all 7 days. Now, Philadelphia and Atlanta also have 7 games because they have the doubleheader on Monday, but they are off on Thursday. It's still nice to see that doubleheader. I think that fact will come up later on in the pod as well. There, what's nice about this week is there are no teams that have the 2 off-day work weeks. Nobody is off Monday and Thursday. The other half of the league is either off Monday or Thursday. So that's nice. You don't have to worry about that as much, especially if you're setting those bi-weekly lineups like you do in the NFBC. With all that in mind, my quick note here is I went back and forth whether or not I was going to put Brett Beatty in the power category and Nick Prado here or vice versa. I ended up obviously talking about Prado in the power category. So I will mention Brett Beatty is playing pretty much every day. And even if we are concerned about him being in a platoon, the Mets are scheduled to face off against 7. They have 7-game work week. They have 7 right-handed starters versus Arizona and Cincinnati all week long. And so even if they give him a day off, it'll just be like a, quote, day of rest. It will not be because of that. He is 49% rostered in the main event. So over half of those leagues and those 15 teamers, he is still readily available. He was just called back up alongside Mark Vientos, who has been filling in mostly at the DH position, has had a day or two at third base as well. But and obviously they have other guys that are filling in across the diamond. But Beatty has pretty much been the staple at third base since his recall. And I would expect that to be the case. Third base, not the easiest position to fill, especially at this stage in the game, in the deeper rosters. And I know he's had his hiccups in the past. Most of the hiccups that I attributed, it was one, lack of playing time and lack of consistency. This is the Mets after all. It's still the Mets, but I think we're at a stage where the Mets really just need to see what they can have with Beatty and a lot of their other younger guys, and the fact that they're not going to have the excuse, or at least not on paper, of sitting him just because there's a lefty coming up this week. Take advantage of the volume that Brett Beatty is looking like he could have this coming week. Any of these other, whether it's the schedule or who they have coming up as their opponents, have your eye for anybody that has a good opportunity this week, Justin?
Yeah, so the player that caught my eye when I was looking at it the week ahead was Patrick Wisdom. Cubs get Colorado and Arizona on the road, and we know that Coors Field is always a recipe for home runs, especially with a power hitter like Patrick Wisdom. They're only going to face 4 righties in those 6 games, but the 2 lefties that they draw are Kyle Freeland and Ty Black, both in Coors Field, of course. They're going to dodge Zach Gallen when they're in Arizona. And as you mentioned, both Colorado and Arizona do play 7 days this week. So you could get some bullpens that are maybe a little bit taxed, a little bit gassed, and running on fumes. Neither of those teams, Arizona is a little bit better now that they have Paul Sewald, but neither of those teams has the league's best bullpen. So I think there's some big opportunity for Patrick Wisdom to score some home runs this week.
Yeah, you got to take advantage of that Colorado series, if nothing else. Yeah, I think it's been talked about enough. Colorado isn't technically the best ballpark for home runs, but it is the best for almost everything else offensively, just because that outfield is so big, and obviously the ball carries both faster and longer through the air. So got to take advantage of those situations. And regardless of Nick Pollock, of course, talks about how those Colorado pitchers aren't actually that bad on the road, that rocky road. They're actually not that bad, but they're not great either. And so keep them in Colorado and you see what we get. All right. That's enough hitters. I think at the moment, let's talk about some pitchers that we're going to be streaming throughout the course of the week or the rest of the season. Of course, we'll start with our counting categories here, Justin, with wins and K's. I'm going to let you lead us off here. Again, we only are focusing on these categories. We'll get to ratios later. So I always say, if we talk about somebody and they kill your ratios, sorry, that's not why we talked about them here. who might vulture a win for you this week and maybe down the line as well, while throwing in some K's for good measure?
Yeah, I appreciate the disclaimer, because I was looking at this and This, I don't know about you, but this to me looks like a tough week to be streaming. I'm glad I'm not in the playoffs. First name I had was Brian Pepiot. If you're looking for wins, like you said, the ratios, who knows? He had a great last start, but he's been up and down. But if you're looking for wins, the Dodgers are a good team to put your money on. He gets San Diego this week and then also gets Detroit next week. And this time of year, with Fab being so crucial as to how you spend it and who you spend it on, I always love when I can get a pitcher for a two-step. It's always good to look one matchup ahead. If you're on the fence about a starter, who are they playing next week? That can sometimes be a tiebreaker. And then for strikeouts, I had Gavin Williams in Cleveland. He's playing San Francisco this week. They don't have the greatest offense. They've got a couple guys that do like to swing. So Gavin Williams, I think maybe he doesn't get the win against San Francisco, but he can certainly rack up strikeouts. He's proven that in the majors.
Yeah, the two starts are always going to be the most tempting, no matter, honestly, almost no matter, except at this, you're at the stage of the season where it's like you've either already determined that you're going to tank your ratios and hope, just cross your fingers that maybe somebody in the 11th spot or the 14th spot can come back down to you as well. Maybe they're also tanking it and then you can be lucky and gain a point or two because they came down to you, not because you went up to them. Yeah. We always say that these ratio categories can go in both directions. They're the only categories you can go up or down based on your production. So, of course, I've got to at least throw in one two-starter myself as well. Jose Quintana, not available in your 15-teamers, but still available in over 40% of your online championships, your 12-teamers. He's got two-step at home, which is nice because he is facing off against Cincinnati, so he doesn't have to go to Cincinnati. He just brings them in, and they obviously have something to face off against. He'll get them on the back end of the week, but he starts off with Arizona in New York. As you mentioned, not the scariest of teams. Of course, we just talked about how they called up Jordan Lawler and Corbin Carroll is going to win Rookie of the Year. Not a team that offensively is a team that I'm not scared to stream against for sure. And Quintana has been, especially my 12 teamers, will be somebody. I grabbed Quintana in one league last week, seeing that this was going to happen next week. So it's like one of those things you have to get ahead of it. That's why he is rostered in almost 60% of the online championships. Most of the time, these teams are getting these guys a week or a week and a half early just so they can skip the fab bids, especially with not having a lot of fab on the table to begin with. So Jose Quintana, if he's available, he's not the flashiest name, but he's been producing. He goes deep into games. So this is not a guy who should, knock on wood, hurt your ratios, but at the same time should be able to volume his way into at least one win out of these two starts, if not two. If the Mets continue to put something together, I always joke about how the Mets probably want to keep their draft pick, which is protected if it's, I think it's like in the top seven or something like that. Yeah. So they may be tanking their way to that protection. They still have the ability to win baseball games. They're still a professional team at this moment. And so he can still do his part to allow them to collect some wins. And then the other guy that isn't a two-starter, but we're throwing out there just because of the matchup. He's not somebody I'm itching to grab because he just has not been producing, minus, I think, one start, is Bailey Falter in Pittsburgh. It's one of those things where it's like, all right, he got out of Philadelphia. He's getting the opportunity in Pittsburgh. Great. Oh, he's actually not that good. It doesn't matter where he is per se, but the fact that he is stretched out, he can definitely pitch himself into a winning situation against the Nationals, has me at least interested if that is the specific category in which I need to go after. 40% rostered in the main event, so even in 15 teamers, still readily available. And just due to the state of where we're at in the season, I venture to guess he will be on most of those fab results boards, even in those 15 teamers, based on this singular matchup that he sees. And he very well may end up with a two starter the following week as well. So this is just one of those, if you want to get a guy a week ahead of time, this might not be the situation in which you keep him on your bench for the one start week, just because that matchup is nice. So again, this is the guy that you're like, all right, I'm taking ratios. Got to get a guy who can put himself into a win. Bailey Falter in Pittsburgh at least has to be on that radar. All right, let's get into the ratios here. I always say that we talk about a lot about relievers in this situation, and that really depends on how many innings these guys are going to be able to put up. So these names that we're going to talk about, we've got a couple of relievers on here as well. Justin has one. I've got two. You want to make sure you check their usage this weekend, both on Saturday, if they haven't played yet for us, and as we're recording this, and then Sunday, obviously, games haven't started yet. If these guys pitch on Saturday and Sunday specifically, even on Sunday all by itself, it gets a little bit of a red flag, because then you're behind the eight ball. They have less opportunity to pitch a lot of innings, or at least multiple days throughout the course of the next week. But if they had the weekend off, they're primed to go on Monday and Tuesday and beyond. So Justin, lead us off here. Who's the guy you might be looking at that can chip away at your ratios pending that they can get the innings to make a dent?
Yeah. So the guy I wanted to talk about was Pierce Johnson with Atlanta. He's traded to Atlanta at the deadline, of course, got freed from Coors Field. And since going to Atlanta, he's got a 2.12 ERA, a 1.0 whip, and 23 strikeouts in 17 innings. So he's definitely a guy that can put up some solid ratios. Like you said, there's going to be some issues with the volume. He's not going to be that 2-3 inning guy. But I do know that he did pitch on Thursday night. Like you said, if he's not pitching over the weekend, then he should be able to pick up some innings over the course of this week.
Yeah, I think that volume is key. And the doubleheader definitely does not hurt, as with the one of the names I'm going to bring up later on as well. I got a couple of relievers that I'm going to throw out here. And these guys are all 0% rostered everywhere from what I can tell. As I alluded to earlier, I am going to talk about another Luis Garcia. This one is the reliever in San Diego, from what I can tell. The elder statesman of the Garcias, of the Luis Garcias out there in Major League Baseball at the moment. But Garcia, overall numbers don't look that great, but hasn't given up an earned run in 13 of his last 14 outings. And in that time, only 4 walks, though he's had 15 hits through his 16 and two-thirds innings. So still a below one whip in just about every single one of those outings and not giving up any runs. San Diego seems to be utilizing him a lot more. And you want to run this streak throughout the course of the week in maybe even September. Again, I'm going to preface this. These are $1 bids. These are guys that are like, I am desperate to fill in my 9 guys in my rotation. And I don't want anybody to hurt me. These guys have less likelihood of actually doing harm. And so at the very least, they are guys that if you're in a situation where you're trying to tread water and maybe you're chipping away at a point or two in those ratios, Luis Garcia, San Diego, is doing good things right now. Ride that wave. Go with it. Marcio Lavera in Boston, who's traded from San Francisco, is another guy in a very similar situation. Since being traded to the Red Sox from the Giants at the trade deadline, he's pitched in 20 and a third innings for Boston and given up just 1 home run. He struck out 19. He's given up 9 earned runs in that time, but 7 of them have come in the 2 appearances at the start of August. So within the first 5 appearances that he made for the Red Sox, he pretty much got all of those earned runs out of the way. So that's nice going into September. But since those 2 appearances, the Red Sox have used him in various ways throughout the bullpen. Most of his spots have come with more than 1 inning attached, including the most recent outing on this past Wednesday, where he's through 3 innings, he allowed just 1 hit and 1 walk. So that volume obviously plays a big role into how much of an impact those ratios can make. And I'm double checking, since I have the box score for the Orioles and Red Sox up right now, if he pitched today. He did. He went. This is really going to hurt my argument here for Lavero. And of course, he went an inning. He lit up 3 earned runs with a home run, did strike out 1. So blip on the radar, pitched on Saturday. Not great. Still somebody I would, if I'm in that situation, I might consider throwing at the very bottom of my waterfall bid and not be terribly like disappointed that I'm forced to put him into my lineup. Yeah, that was real time disappointment you just heard. Yeah. I'm not going to edit that out.
Like you said, he got them out of the way, though. You won't get those when you pick them up.
You don't get those runs. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, it is somebody that the Red Sox, I don't believe he's actually gotten one yet, but this is a guy that the Red Sox use in the middle of games or in the, he's not a high leverage guy. So he could get into a situation where he's vulturing a win if he comes in a tie game or whatnot. Not why I'm picking him up here, obviously, but somebody, just a name to watch in case you need to tread some water in those categories moving forward. All right. Last pitching category here, Justin. We got our saves category, and I'm going to throw out Jose Alvarado to start here. This was, as I mentioned, it's you want to target these double headers. Jose Alvarado, pretty much, at least as of recent, sharing the closer role with Craig Kimbrel. He's got the one save a few days ago after Kimbrel did. And so this seems like an obvious dart throw. He's not hurting you in any other categories as well. Only 11% roster in the main event. He's readily available out there. He hasn't really gotten into a game since, but neither has Kimbrel, to be fair. And so the fact that he is still possibly sharing closing duties on a very winning ball club at the moment. Mm-hmm. They have a doubleheader. Granted, it's against Atlanta on the chance that Philly wins both of those games. Then they need to close out both of them. Kimbrel's not closing out both of them. Alvarado's not closing out both of them. So we'll see based on the situation, whether they go lefty heavy, righty heavy, depending on matchups. That's obviously a play. But Alvarado had that role before he got injured earlier in the season. And obviously, Kimbrel ran with it ever since. And I don't really necessarily believe that Kimbrel's out of that role at the moment. But the fact that Alvarado is the obvious man up slash has gotten a save as of recent seems to be the low-hanging fruit in this category personally. So I wanted to make sure I threw him on this sheet before you had a chance to, so I could take that low-hanging fruit. Sorry.
Oh, totally fine.
Anybody else besides the what I consider to be the low-hanging fruit, especially since Alvarado is so readily available everywhere at 11% rostered in the main event, these 15-teamers, anybody else that we should be keeping our eye on if they're available for us?
Yeah, I'm happy to let you take Alvarado because it gives me a chance to talk about my guy here, Matt Brash. With Felix Bautista on the IL right now, Matt Brash might be the best strikeout thrower amongst all relievers in all of baseball right now. He's got 96 strikeouts in 61 innings. And obviously we're talking about saves here, but I've heard a rumor that teams tend to like closers that miss bats. Andrés Muñoz, he has been struggling with the job since taking over as closer in Seattle, with Paul Sewald now in Arizona, of course. And the Mariners are totally eyeing that AL West crown. As we get down to the stretch here, they do not want to fall out of the playoffs. If Andrés Muñoz continues to struggle like he did just the other day, Matt Brash could at least start vulturing more saves, if not take the role outright. So I think it's very similar to what you're saying about Alvarado, that we could be looking at a similar co-closer type situation in Seattle here.
Yeah, I've talked about it all season long because ever since we had Grant Washburn on the show early on in the season, he talked about how arbitration plays a role in who gets saves and who doesn't get saves. I do tend to believe that Andrés Muñoz has more of a leash than I think we might want him to because of how good Brash has been. Just because Muñoz is under contract, doesn't matter how many saves he gets, it's not going to affect how much they pay him. That's already set. Where obviously Brash, I don't even know if he's eligible for arbitration yet, but he'll be eligible at some point, and those saves pay top dollar in those situations. So I do worry about that situation because as every player will say, especially at the trade deadline, this is a business and they understand that. And so I do worry about it. Can't take anything away from his production, Matt Brash, that is. Obviously that speaks for itself and he's not going to hurt you. And as long as he keeps the ball in the strike zone, as you mentioned, and misses those bats and doesn't go back to walking every other batter that we saw when he first came up. So it'd be somebody that I would be very interested in rostering. I do, especially long term, I worry about how many saves he'll actually get beyond after, you know, Moose's pitch back-to-back games or something like that. And we talked about that last episode. That might be more valuable than grabbing somebody like Trevor May or Carlos Hernandez, if they're available in your shallower leagues, just because Matt Brash might get just as many opportunities from that situation as the set closer does on a really bad team that doesn't give them the opportunities to get saves themselves. So depending on the situation of your league, that it still makes sense regardless of whether or not they are the guy or not the guy.
And the nice thing with Brash is, even if he doesn't get you saves, like I said, he's getting you a big pile of strikeouts, and the ratios have been pretty nice since the first half.
Manageable, yeah, for sure. All right, we'll move on to the final category, my favorite category. And I got a guy on here. I usually leave this category off myself. I just like listening to what everybody else has to say. But I'll let you end the podcast with your guy here. So I'm going to throw out Josh Jung. He very well may be rejoining the Texas Rangers next weekend in Cleveland, if all goes well with the remaining rehab situation that he has going on. And so, again, I talked about third base earlier being so difficult. This, and Kevin talks about this, is we're beyond stashing season. But if we're at a point where we get somebody like Josh Jung, who is all but certain to be back next week, even if it's next weekend, I'll stash him for this, for at least the first half of the week, if not the entire week, and then start him the following week. Because once he does come back, you're not going to be able to, it'll cost you a lot more. And yeah, it's still probably going to cost you. People are aware that he's coming back. So they're still going to be worth spending whatever fab dollars you have, because I would expect he's going to slot right back into the lineup where he was in Texas. They need that kind of production that he can produce in that lineup as they fight for that division against Houston and against Seattle. And then if not, holding on to their hold on to the wild card spot regardless. Josh Jung, 0% rostered in the main event. He did not come up in my control F. So unless I did that wrong, he should be available pretty much everywhere and available to be bid on. It's not like this is a prospect coming up where they have to make their debut first in that format. So Josh Jung of Texas should be available in your league. He should be coming back, and he could, even in your playoff, in your head-to-head playoffs, if this is a single year, not a dynasty, he very well might be available, and he can make a big impact on your team in the semifinals or the finals, depending on how your playoffs are structured. Check to see if Josh Jung is available. End us off here on a high note. Justin, in your wild card, again, I always talk about this guy may not fit into any other category that we talked about earlier. Maybe a stash, could be an IL guy, could be a prospect you think could be coming up. Who might you be eyeing if you have some kind of flexibility in your roster to make this kind of a wild card type pickup?
Yep. So I picked an IL stash as well, actually. Kyle Wright with Atlanta. So this is pure conjecture here. I should point out that I've not seen any tweets yet that back this up in any way. But based on the timing of his rehab schedule, which I was just looking at, he should be making a start tomorrow. And he could potentially get the ball on Friday, which would be against Miami on the road, which is a really good situation if you're looking for wins and some strikeouts and maybe even some decent ratios, at least ratios that won't kill you in a playoff race. Yes, he'd be a still ill. He's been out for a while. But when you're playing for the best team in baseball, you know, Atlanta has 92 wins right now. That's generally a good methodology for a pickup. Great way to get wins this late in the season when everyone seems to need wins right now in the playoffs.
Yeah, that still ill fits in some formats, and it's not an option in other formats. Yeah. Like, sometimes you do not have the flexibility to bench a guy that is starting. Simple as that. Yeah.
You just have to roll the dice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to do a editorial comment to my last comment. Josh Jung, I did apparently do the control F wrong. Josh Jung, 26% rostered in the main event, 39% rostered in your online championship. So this is one of those rare situations in which you see somebody rostered in more 12 teamers than you do 15 teamers, at least when you're comparing these two specific formats. But still, those are very low percentages in general. Yeah. He's still readily available. Kyle Wright. Yeah, it's a good one. Kyle Wright, 25% rostered in the online championship. And if I go over to the main event, he should come right up. 68% rostered in the main event. Again, also readily available in a good chunk of leagues at those in the little bit deeper of a format. So if you have the flexibility to stash an IL guy this late in the season, both these guys should be on your radar. Well, that is going to wrap it up for episode 131 of On the Wire. Justin, thank you so much for joining me here this week. Give everybody an opportunity to, or remind everybody where they can find you, what kind of work you have coming up, and the best way to find said work.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You can find me on Twitter at HavelockJustin. You can also find the podcast at The Outpitch Pod. And don't forget to check out The Outpitch on Substack, and make sure you check out Pitcherlist and come hang out with us in the Discord, because if you're around there, you'll definitely see me around, whether it's on the site or in the Discord. I'm always hanging out somewhere.
Yeah, of course, you get access to that by joining PL Plus or PL Pro. PL Plus gets you into the Discord, gets you the ad-free website and all that. PL Pro gets you a whole bunch of other stuff and a whole bunch of stuff we're both not allowed to talk about and don't even know ourselves. Because yep. Nick keeps a lot of this stuff close to the vest until it's ready to go. We got PLX coming out next season, right before the regular season starts up. Of course, he takes the tech route and says there's no such thing as 9. So we had PL8 last year. We're skipping 9, going right to PLX. It's not even 10. It's PLX. Got to stick with that format. But a lot of fun stuff and really cool stuff coming out. And if you get the yearly subscription, you'll get all that. You get the free QB list stuff that is included in your PL Plus and PL Pro subscriptions as well. And so, yeah, the Discord alone pays for it. Simple as that. But all the cool tools, obviously, all the PLV tools, the apps that you get with that stuff as well, is more than pays for that as well. I believe the podcast code is still active. If you want to, you can use promo code podcast, all capital letters. I don't even remember what the percentage is off, but it'll be a discount. So use that. Just use it. If you find a discount code, you should always use it. I don't care where you are on the web, just use it and get whatever discount you can possibly get. But that is going to wrap it up for episode 131 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Haston Kevin. Of course, follow the pod itself at On the Wire Pod. So once again, thank our guest, Justin Havelock, for joining us this week. Follow him at Havelock Justin. And after all that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Haston, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.